This is a Career Channel program from UC San Diego Extension. Visit us at www.uctv.tv/careers for videos, employment news, and trend articles to help recent college graduates and grads in career transition bridge to better employment.
Hello and welcome to The Pulse, Issues in Healthcare, the podcast where healthcare leaders share their thoughts on the issues of the day. This is Leslie Bruce. I'm your host and the Director of Healthcare Leadership and Community Outreach for UC San Diego Extension. Today marks our 30th show, and I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Wilma Wooten, the Public Health Officer for the County of San Diego. Welcome, Dr. Wooten.
Thank you, Leslie.
Let's start with your career journey to this point. How did you come to be the health officer for the County of San Diego?
Well, I guess that's a long story, starting back when, going to medical school, because in California, you have to be a physician to be a health officer for any of the public health jurisdictions. Starting from high school, probably about the ninth grade, I knew that I wanted to go to medical school. So that was my journey, and that was my drive and determination in going to college. I went to Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia, which is an all-girls school, and then went to North Carolina, went to graduate school at UNC, graduate school of public health, then went to medical school, worked between those times. I processed TB specimens at one point and worked in the laboratory on the midnight shift at another point, and after completing medical school, went to D.C., where I completed my family practice residency in the Georgetown Providence Hospital family practice residency. After completing that residency, ended up in San Diego because I was interested in sports medicine. Hmm. And that's really what brought me to San Diego, because I was looking for a fellowship in sports medicine, but I stumbled upon the preventive medicine residency.
I see.
And in the preventive medicine residency, you got your MPH, and then you also focus on a number of various tracks. At the time, there was a sports medicine track. I already had my master's in public health, so I thought that it would be a nice marriage, actually, mm-hmm. and applied, got in, and focused on the sports medicine. And exercise and nutrition science really was the primary focus.
So you had a good dose of prevention side. That's great.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so this was at the UCSD School of Medicine.
Yes, it's a joint program between San Diego State University and UCSD.
Okay, great. And then I know you were part of the department for a while, mm-hmm. and that's where we first met.
Absolutely. Actually, yes, I think uh-huh. it was, exactly. Uh-huh. So after I finished the preventive medicine residency, that was just a one-year experience. I joined the faculty at UCSD, and I was there for 11 years. I actually worked on projects with the American Heart Association. I think that's where we met.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, we had a wonderful project,
yes.
African Women in Heart Disease.
Exactly.
That was great. Yeah, an excellent project. So you obviously have this amazing background in education, and then why the county? Why? How did that happen?
Well, after being at UCSD for 11 years, I just wanted a new experience and wanted to focus more on the population health focus, which I had the background in, mm-hmm. and a position came available at the health department. I applied for it, and actually, in applying for that position, another position was available, and which is the deputy health officer position, and so that's the position that I was hired for.
Okay, mm-hmm. well, so you've been there a good long time. Hopefully that things are running smoothly, mm-hmm. you feel like. And so what are the primary responsibilities mm-hmm. of your job?
Yeah, well, you know, I really like my job. It's a demanding job, but no day is the same. Mm-hmm. Most days are filled with meetings, but they're meetings about various things, whether they're troubleshooting personnel issues. That's not the usual day. Mm-hmm. But meeting with staff about various program activities. We have numerous prevention activities. We have grants in our chronic disease unit that really provide a strong support for Live Well San Diego for two of our major strategies for the Live Well San Diego initiative, which is healthy choices or positive choices, and creating policy systems and environmental changes. So we have a prevention grant, which is looking at marrying public health with primary care, but from a clinical preventive services standpoint. So trying to conduct outreach for those individuals that have pre-diabetes or pre-hypertension. We really are, this particular grant supports the Million Hearts Initiative, which is a national initiative to decrease heart attack and stroke. So that activity supports that national initiative. It also supports a national initiative of Be There San Diego, which is to make San Diego a heart attack and stroke free zone. So there are a lot of connections
Deja vu.
Here.
And yes, there you go.
Exactly.
Well, I know you have, you know, you have incredible responsibility for preventing epidemics and protecting against environmental hazards and that kind of thing, and mm-hmm. obviously the promotion of healthy behaviors, like you just talked about. It seems like a very big job, and I'm sure no two mm-hmm. days are alike. So give us an idea of what a day looks like, even if it's there is no typical one.
Sure.
Besides
sure.
meetings, you have the first five. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the different kinds of things?
Well, I would probably start out by saying, when you ask what does a health officer do or what does public health do, there are probably three words that fit and describe what we do. We promote, prevent, and protect. So we promote health and wellness, prevent disease and disability, and protect the public from threats, whether they are natural disasters or public health threats like pandemic influenza, or we have pertussis epidemic, or any type of outbreaks. We've had measles outbreaks.
Well, let's talk about that, as a matter of fact, because I did want to get to the epidemics, because mm-hmm. I know that's a lot on people's minds. You know, it seems like for years we didn't really worry about those, mm-hmm. and, you know, once in a while there would be a bad flu, mm-hmm. but, and yet this past year we have faced the prospect of Ebola, and we've had a measles resurgence.
Exactly.
So starting with Ebola, when mm-hmm. you had heard that it had been diagnosed in the U.S., what was your role? What did you do?
Well, the primary focus for public health is to work with the primary care community so that we are equipped to handle or manage a case if it hits the doors of our healthcare systems. And that's what we did locally through guidance from CDC, Centers for Disease and Prevention, as well as the state, mm-hmm. the California Department of Public Health. So focus on their, well, working with them, we implemented guidances to ensure that if a person came in our ambulance system, if they came into our emergency departments, at least the basic elements of infectious disease control was in place. CDC later went on to identify treatment centers across the U.S. Now, there were two locations where individuals, when they were flown from the affected countries, mm-hmm. where they went, Nebraska and CDC. And then after the the case in Texas, mm-hmm. where the gentleman came to Texas and was infected, after that situation occurred, then that's when the CDC wanted to make sure that there were treatment centers throughout the U.S. So there are several treatment centers in California, but the one for San Diego is UCSD.
Okay. Well, and you had to be in touch with the primary care providers and all sorts of emergency mm-hmm. providers mm-hmm. to make sure that they had the proper protocols from CDC. And
Absolutely. We have a great team at the county. We have Dr. Eric McDonald, who's our medical director for epidemiology. We have Dr. Bruce Haynes, who's the medical director for our emergency medical services. Dr. McDonald, and also we have our laboratory director, Dr. Michael Lancaster. And each of them worked with various factors, various sectors in the healthcare system to ensure that those pieces were up to par and equipped, properly equipped and trained, and knew what the process was.
See, that's key.
Yes, that mm-hmm. it's very key. And that's key for any situation, actually. I saw Ebola as an opportunity to shore up our healthcare system because there are other infectious diseases that we will face. We had SARS in the early 2000s, and I think it was about 2003 and 4. There's bound to be something else. There's MERS-CoV that's in the Saudi Arabia or the Arabian Peninsula. We have coronavirus in Asia, in China. So there are many other viruses that are out there. And because we have a very global community, these various infections are just an airplane away.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Luckily, with Ebola, CDC basically developed this system that anyone was leaving the affected areas, they had to know, well, they basically know who they are and they know what airports they're coming into on the East Coast. Mm. And then once they leave these, if they were leaving the East Coast, coming to any other countries outside of those large airports that people typically go to, receiving travelers from Europe and Africa, the health department at the state is notified, and then they notify us. So we monitor individuals that are coming from affected countries, whether they are going to do volunteer work, or if they're administrators, or helping in any or assisting in any way with the Ebola epidemic that's in Western Africa. But we know who's in San Diego, and so the state knows who's in California, and that's the same for all of the states throughout the U.S. So it's certainly a system that I had never experienced before, but it's a great one because then we can have better control. If someone is infected, not yet demonstrated symptoms, we contact them twice a day.
Most
of the individuals, though, are very low risk. So they have not had any contact with individuals with the infection. But that's the process. We monitor low risk and then some risk individuals.
Well, that's reassuring. I can tell you, you know, as I'm sure the rest of the population will find it as well, that there is such tight awareness of the situation and, you know, with a prevention in mind. So that's absolutely wonderful to hear. And you know, somewhat similar and yet somewhat different is this measles outbreak. It's not coming from somewhere else. It's coming from within. And so how do you combat that? And what do you tell parents who are unsure about getting their children vaccinated?
Well, regarding measles, it actually is coming from somewhere else. It's another example of the fact that we have a global community. The measles outbreaks that since 2000 that we see now are due to two things. Either an individual who's not vaccinated goes to an endemic country, is exposed there and comes back here, is infected and spreads it to other individuals. That was the case with the outbreak that we had in 2008. The recent outbreak at the Disneyland most likely is due to someone from an endemic country who's here and exposed individuals that were not vaccinated at Disneyland. So the infections are from other countries. Either we're going to those countries and coming back, or individuals from those countries are coming here. And usually Western Europe, Asia, Philippines are where the endemic, where those countries are endemic for measles.
And so what is the county doing then on this front? Because I know you keep a registry and
the most important way to contain an outbreak such as measles is to conduct contact investigations. So immediately when there is a case identified. But even let me back up from that. The first thing is to identify. Just as with Ebola, you identify, you isolate, and then you inform. That mantra, identify, isolate, and inform. Identify, so asking individuals about where they have traveled, key for Ebola, key for many other infections, and for measles. Did you go to Disneyland? Because that was the epidemiological thread. And if people traveled there during the times where the exposure was thought to have occurred between December 18th and December 20th. So that was the first question. Have you traveled there? And what are the symptoms? Usually with measles, the rash starts in the head area, mm-hmm. along the hairline, and extends downward into the extremities. Without that actual, that progression, usually it's not measles, but the fever has to occur first. And the rash usually can occur anywhere from 3 to 5 days after the fever. If you have the fever and the rash occurring at the same time, most likely it's not measles. But so it's knowing the symptoms, the characteristics of the symptoms, also knowing the exposure and just gathering the history. And if you suspect, if a provider suspects that an individual has measles, they should be isolated. Just as the way providers commonly do if they have a patient coming in with chickenpox. And typically, you don't want someone that you know who's coming in with those conditions. You don't want them coming through the waiting room.
Sure.
You have them either come in the back door. And some doctors even went outside and examine them in their car, because again, you don't want to expose others.
Right, sure.
And the important thing is that if they were diagnosed, because there's no treatment mm-hmm. Other than treating the symptoms, fever, making sure that the individuals are hydrated, then the individuals go home and they're isolated at home. Mm-hmm. But then the next step is to inform our epidemiology department so that we can begin the contact investigation, because that's really key. The more aggressive you can be with finding out who's been exposed to that individual and where did they go, so that we can publicize the location so that anyone who went to those locations can monitor themselves for those symptoms, and if they develop the symptoms, then contact their doctor.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, it certainly is a formula.
It works.
That's great. Well, I know that you're also responsible for responding to natural disasters. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. these are obviously a kind of disaster also. But when I think of you, frequently I see you on television during the epic fires that we've had.
Yes, yes.
So what is your role during those times?
Well, during natural disasters like fires, I'm part of the policy group for our overall county's incident command system, management of disasters. So I'm part of the policy group along with my director, Nick Machione, as well as the chief administrative officer for the county, Helen Robbins Myers, as well as the director for the Office of Emergency Services, who is Holly Crawford. And then other key people involved with the fire chiefs, sometimes elected officials are there mm-hmm. In terms of our board of supervisors and other elected officials. But the primary focus during fires really is protection of property or persons and property. Mm-hmm. That's the primary focus. I get involved when we're talking about what are the health effects of the smoke which is smoke caused by fires. That really is how I get involved.
Okay.
But really the primary focus during disasters is protection of person and property.
Okay. Very interesting. And I was wanting to get us back on a more positive mm-hmm. footing and talk again mm-hmm. more about the county's very innovative approaches to promoting healthy behavior. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear more about that.
We have really a number of, within public health, a number of activities related to federal grants that we have. We have a salt reduction grant.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. We have been funded by USDA for our SNAP Ed. So that's basically education, nutrition education, and now it includes physical activity education for those individuals that are food stamp recipients.
Mm-hmm.
We have the prevention grant that I spoke of earlier. We also have home visitation grant that supports a nurse family partnership home visitation program already in place that our agency and director and executives made a commitment to utilize public health nurses to conduct those home visits for those high-risk first-time moms who were pregnant. So that's a national program that's evidence-based. It used to be called the Olds model, but it's a national program, again, evidence-based, great outcomes. And so those are just some of the health promotion activities. We have an oral health program. We have a mighty team of two staff focused on violence prevention, and we partner with other departments throughout the county to create this family prevention strategy. So that's a few of the activities. We have a lead program that's focused on
lead poisoning prevention. Very interesting. I mean, I know that San Diego has gotten an extraordinary number of federal grants before its innovative programs. And, you know, I think that makes us unique in ways that not every county has these resources that are provided to them because of the innovative thinking that's going on in the department. Are there any public health issues that are specific to San Diego? I mean, we are this wonderful, you know, creative, fertile ground for health promotion. Are there any other kinds of conditions that are unique to us that others don't have to deal with?
Well, because we are a border county, we have a lot of issues to deal with in that regard. We have a queso fresco task force because queso fresco is basically homemade cheese that's unpasteurized.
Okay.
And while it might be very delicious and a delicacy thought of as a delicacy by some, because it's not pasteurized, it puts individuals at risk, particularly pregnant women, at risk to being exposed to various bacteria like Listeria or E. coli even. But that's an issue that we experience here because we are a border county. So we work with the Customs and Border Protection at the border to... At times, we have situations where we will basically stop cars and check for queso fresco. That's not a common occurrence, but it has happened.
What do you do when you find one?
We confiscate it.
Okay.
It's confiscated.
And do they understand why? The reason?
Yes. Okay. Yes, they do. So, but the primary thing that task force does is to educate. Is to work with various partners to get information out to the community, to those targeted groups to educate them about the risks of this queso fresco that's unpasteurized.
Gotcha. I think this would be a wonderful task for promotoras to engage in.
Yes.
I imagine they are.
Another important, because we are a border, there are two other things I wanted to share with you. We have a consortium, a border health consortium, which is made up on the U.S. side of academicians, nonprofit organizations, county governments, including San Diego and Imperial counties, our medical society partners. And we are working with partners on the Mexico side. So we've identified our strategic plan on this side, but we're also working with partners on the Mexico side so we can come up with a joint strategic plan. We have a charter.
Makes sense.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Great. That's great.
And the three areas that have been identified to work on this side, and it's being finalized jointly, but is obesity, TB, and HIV. So those are the three areas. And that brings me to the second point, which is tuberculosis. Because we are also a border county, tuberculosis really is an important issue for us. 75% of our cases of tuberculosis are in foreign-born individuals, and that includes Mexico and the Philippines.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, it sounds like this is a interesting area. Do you partner with other border counties? You know, obviously there's a whole group of us, you know, that extend through Texas.
And exactly. All the way to El Paso. Our CDC global quarantine, well, we have a quarantine station, CDC San Diego quarantine station here, and they are co-located in our facility at Rosecrans. They also communicate with and work with their officials along the U.S.-Mexico border all the way to El Paso. So there are numerous opportunities for us to look at transport of specimens across the border, mm-hmm. or how we manage individuals that are crossing back and forth, like tuberculosis patients. Mm-hmm. We have a very robust system here with our TB staff and with the custom and border protections. When an individual may, if they are in treatment and they decide they don't want to be in treatment anymore and they might want to go to Mexico, we put them on a no, it's almost like a no-fly list. Uh-huh. But basically, so the border Customs and Border Protection is notified.
Gotcha.
So that they are on the alert for that individual. And we've identified people that have been crossing. It's very effective.
Wow.
And we work in collaboration with the quarantine station to help us, once those individuals that they are identified, they help us identify basically contain them.
Yeah, sure.
That's the word I'm looking for.
There you go.
They help us contain that individual until our staff can go and get them, and then we have to figure out what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we put them in a location where we can monitor them, that really, if that's a hospital, depending on their medical condition,
sure.
or if we put them in a location where we can monitor them and treat them and make sure that they take their medication.
I was going to say, may ensure that they are complying
exactly.
with the treatment plan. Exactly.
And sometimes we have to contain them
uh-huh.
for that purpose, yes.
That's interesting. Let's go back to the job just a little bit and mm-hmm. just say, you know, is there anything that surprises you about this role or that you didn't expect to be included in?
No, nothing. I was a deputy health officer for 6 years before I became health officer, so I kind of saw... I knew exactly what I was getting into.
Well, yeah. You must have liked it on the deputy side mm-hmm. because here you took the directorship. And so what is the most rewarding part of your job?
The health promotion
uh-huh.
aspect of my job. Strategic planning. I love strategic planning. Not only planning strategically, but then monitoring the progress and reporting it and getting information. I really enjoy that side of the house of what I do as health officer, educating the public. That really
sure.
is
seeing behaviors change
exactly.
and all the things that we mm-hmm. get treated for being prevented from the get-go. Hopefully,
exactly.
you see that dial
exactly.
move. That's helpful. Well, one of the things that I think I share with you that our listeners are frequently interested in are the workforce issues.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, if you would, about the workforce in the Department of Health. The most recent labor report you probably saw, I think it was last week, stated that healthcare sector continues to add jobs. And so what kinds of knowledge and competencies are you looking for in mm-hmm. in the Health and Human Services Agency?
Well, from the public health perspective, going back to health promotions, I think that there are new positions that many health departments are looking at bringing on that are not the typical positions.
Hmm.
Like, we know we work with city planners, but some health departments like New York, I'll throw them out, and others, Seattle possibly, are beginning to look at having those type of individuals on their in their workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So informatics, individuals that are trained in informatics, that's another position that I think is a burgeoning position that will benefit public health.
Interesting.
And also some health departments have community health workers on staff.
Mm-hmm.
We have health promotion staff and we work with community Some of our departments, like Aging and Independent Services, works with community health workers. But that's another area, I think, for public health across the board. We could look at it and improve, including those individuals on our staff.
You know, that's very interesting. I think you make a good point that the county frequently doesn't provide the direct services in our county.
Mm-hmm.
They contract with private organizations to do that. And so those are a fertile place mm-hmm. for positions related mm-hmm. to public health.
Exactly. The unique thing about, I think it's unique, and it puts us in a very unique and positive situation, is that the county does not have a county hospital, nor do we have primary care clinics. So we do contract. Previously, when we had county medical services, and we still have a small cadre of individuals, clients that are in our county medical services program, but most of those clients now are in Medi-Cal because of the Affordable Care Act.
I was going to ask you if the Affordable Care Act had a measurable, or at least if you could see an impact on what you do at this point.
From the social services side, because that department actually is not under me, but our director, as he states, we are an agency of one. So we are involved with the planning, and while it's not directly under me, many of our HIV patients under Ryan White also were eligible for Medi-Cal because Ryan White, as you know, is a resource, of last resort, a resource of last resort. And given the fact that Affordable Care Act expanded its criteria for people to
get enrolled
not only in Medicare but also the what we call in California Covered California, but for the Ryan White, that was into Medi-Cal. So long story short, while that's under another department, we work collaboratively to look at how we can improve the care and transition of care for select clients.
Well, it's good to hear that it's had a positive impact that you can see already. I think that's heartening. And do you think then that with this new advent of coverage that people have, whether it is through Medi-Cal or through Covered California, that the health of the population will improve as a whole?
I certainly think so. I would. It has to, because now people won't selectively decide to go to the ED. Well, I don't have a doctor, and I'll wait until it really gets bad before I go to the emergency department. Exactly. So now with having a primary care provider, there are services for adults and children, preventive services that are available. Simple things like getting your blood pressure checked or getting your cholesterol checked or having screenings based on your age and sex that are recommended by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. So I think it can only help to improve the health of our communities and our nation.
Well, on that very happy note, thank you very much. That was a positive way to end the show. I want to thank you, Dr. Wooten. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. I know I speak for all our listeners when I wish you the best in all your efforts, because your success is our success, I'm sure.
Thank you.
And I want to thank our listeners and let them know that to be notified of all future podcasts, go to extension.ucsd.edu and click on My Extension and provide us with your email. And if you have suggestions for guests you'd like to hear, please let us know by emailing careerchannel@ucsd.edu. We look forward to our next conversation, but for now, here's to your health.